This is an account of the village of Hardman, as I've seen it over the last 70 years. I was born at Wilburton in 1908 and moved to Hardman in 1910. The village at that time was an agricultural community, more or less self-sufficient, and the railway was the means of transport to the outside world, apart from one horse-drawn carriage to Ely on Thursdays and one to Cambridge on the Saturday. The rest of the transport was bicycle or horseback and trap. The horses at that time of day were the main economy of the village, and the local fair where they were bought and sold was Ely Fair. And at the time when I came to Hadnam, my father was a baker, and going in to baking, bakehouse and baking things, we came into contact with quite a lot of the village. The people living in the village were very conservative, and my father, being unable to lift, got exemption from one of the boys from joining the army in the First World War. I had four brothers in the First World War, and a lot of the lads of the village were called up to go, and there wasn't much exemption that you could get at that particular time, so my sister had to go on the bread round at the age of 12 and 13, as I'd only one brother left to help in the bakehouse. The village at that time consisted of all the various tradesmen necessary for the running of the village. We had the two bakers and one redundant bakery. My father lived at the Jubilee Bakery and the old Windmill Public House, which were joined together, and he opened a tea room called the Jubilee Tea Rooms, and we had the North Country people come down for their holidays. Quite a number lodged at the Three Kings, but they fed at the Jubilee Tea Rooms. And then, as they went from the village, as all the girls, surplus girls, it was to go in service or in the shops in London and that sort of place, a few of these girls came down in the height of fashion. It was quite a sight to see these high-heeled shoes as they wore that time of day. And the men used to work on the farms as far as the labour they would take, but the rest of the labour migrated to the industrial Midlands. And when they got their holidays, they used to come back to Hadnam, and as they had children and that, their children came back to Hadnam. And therefore, when they went to the seaside, they went to our seaside place, which was Hunstanton or Yarmouth, and you still get a lot of North Country people born in the village that come down for the holidays, either to Yarmouth or to Hunstanton. Then, after the war, we got various alterations in the village, or the village life began to change. We had then begun to tar the main road from Hadnam to Wilburton, We had two telephones in the village and about three motor cars before the war. And after the war, H.T. Setchell, who was the leading miller, bought a lorry, and that was the first lorry we had in Haddon. The doctor, who was Dr. Hale, he bought the first Model T Ford as a motor car. And it began to get a bit dangerous on the roads then. And from then on, things began to move. And until later on, we've got an odd tractor coming. And I myself drove the fourth tractor we had in the village. And the horses at that time began to get used more for light ploughing than they did the heavy ploughing. You didn't see the big horse teams that we had, three and four horses on a plough on the heavy lands. The cultivation of the very heavy lands was occasionally done by the steam ploughs. These ploughs in our village were owned by Heather, a man by the name of Heather, and driven by the chimney sweep for the name of Watts. And sometimes Chivers, who had a farm in Haddon, brought their tackle over, so it was quite a sight to go to the field and see the two engines and hear them whistle for the water when they were short of water, and occasionally ride on the engine or stand on the engine while they were working. The tradespeople in the village, if you take them on the high street to start with, we had the main grocer's shop that was owned by a Mr. Tebbutt, who employed two men and three or four girls and a milliner, and he sold normal groceries and drapery and hats. The reason they kept a milliner was that the ladies wanted them feather dressed or such. The next place down the village was the high street was the doctor's, followed by the local watchmaker, Adam Palmer, and followed then by a man by the name of Doyley, who owned a grocer and draper shop, and he opened from 8 in the morning until 10 at night, and you could always get your supplies from there at almost any time of the day. Going by there, we had the butcher's shop by Butcher Palmer, Arthur Palmer, and next to that was the local cyclist shop, which was run by a man from Sutton by the name of Alf Drake. And as you go farther down the village, you come to a disused bakery. Next door to that was the wheelwright and carpenter, Harry Savage. He was a tradesman and a very skilled man at that, but he would never work when anyone else was there, apart from the time when they were shoeing wheels. He would leave off work the moment anyone went in the yard. But he was an excellent ladder maker and made quite a number of carts and wagons in my time. And the latter part of the time, he turned over to making four-wheel trailers with rubber-tired wheels. That, of course, is gone now. We had a public house called the Bell, and behind that was a field which was called Champions Close. No doubt that's where the bear fights used to take place. Farther down the village still, we had the basket maker shop, who grew their own willows in the fens, and he would make a picking basket for 1 and 6, or with a cane handle you could get one for 1 and 9. And he also made the flats, as we used to call them, and that was a square, an oblong basket with a lid on, which they used for sending away asparagus. Next door to him was the tailor's shop, where you could see the tailor sitting cross-legged on his bench making suits. After we got past that, we come to another butcher's shop that belonged to a man named Ernest Peters. Beyond that we had Robert Collins' shop, which was a grocer's and draper's. Then we had a public house or two, and then we had the derelict brewery. This was still used as a store by one of the brewers, but no beer was brewed there, not in my time. It was called the Vine, the public house which was on the front of it. When you got by that, we had the first tailor's shop, which belonged to Robert Peters. Next door to that was the blacksmith shop, belonged to a man by the name of Miller. And then we came to the local farmyard. It belonged to a man named Solomon. When you left there, then you got the road leading down to Aldreth, and you had gardens on either side, one or two little houses, and one or two recently built big houses that belonged to Marples and Mortons. Next door to that was a little tiny cottage, and they used to sell a few candles and an odd fish or two and a few matches and that sort of things, and my brother always called that the International Stores. It belonged to a man by the name of Claude Hall. Then we had the first pond on that road, where it was the policy of the farmers and anyone who had carts and that sort of thing to go through these ponds in the summertime to soak the fellies of the wheels and also to wash the horses' feet as coming out of the fen with the feathery legs of the farm horses that would wash the dust out of them. We go along a bit farther and we come to a mill which is called the Great Mill, and that was owned by John Lawrence, who only retired about 10 or 15 years back. On the other side of the road was a wooden mill that belonged to a man by the name of Neville, and it was a saying of Charlie Bester's that there wasn't enough wind for two mills, so they had to pull that one down. You went along a bit farther and you come to a big house that was left unfinished for a long, long time, so the fella didn't have to pay rates, and that was belonged to old Bill Burkett, and it was the last house that was built where the bricks were made on the spot. Two men from Doddington came over and dug the clay and burnt the bricks, and William built the house, and I had the job some later years of fitting it all out with picture rails, and that was one of the first houses where they used cement in the brickwork, and I found it out to my cost when I come to cut the keyholes for the plugs. Farther from just by there was Chivers Gardens, and they had several gardens in Aldreth and planted some during my time. On the opposite side of the road was an old factory, as they called it, and that was the slaughterhouse and the place where they took all the dead animals of the village, and horses and that sort of thing, and they cut them up and boiled them up and boiled them for the fat and for the hoofs, and skinned them and sold the skins to Cambridge. And I'd never known it to be used, not during my time. Then when you get farther down the hill, you come to Aldworth, another part of Haddon, which owned two pubs, the White Swan and the Three Tuns. It also had a general store where you could buy almost anything you want. The owner used to go to St. Ives or Ely, and if you ordered anything, he would get it for you, whether it was a halter or anything else. He also killed pigs, so you could buy your meat. He sold stamps, you could buy your stamps there, and was very useful for the point of view of the village. Just beyond that, you come to the black half mile of Heriwood the Wake and the waterway called the Canal, which used to carry the river traffic before my time up to the village, as all the coal, corn and that sort of things before the railway used to come that way. And in my time it was only used for carting sugar beet. Now if we take from the village green, which had a history of trouble from before my time, as a lot of people wanted to enclose it, so they put a fence around it. And I understand that one of the local boys was given the job of driving an engine across it, straight through the fence. But that was only hearsay to my knowledge. But on the green, there was the local chapel on the north side, and on the south part of the green was a row of houses, which at my time was the barber's shop, and next door was an old feast lady who used to make Polly Lowe's humbugs, as we used to call them, the treacle sweets. Next to that was the one of the local bootmakers. This area was at one time all old buildings. It included one cottage, one butcher shop, which was owned by a man by the name of Harold Orson, who had a very clean shop, a very neat and tidy man he was. And he had half a bullock, a sheep and two or three pigs per week. The next door was the old lady, and another shop next to the bootmakers was the local hairdressers, or barber as we called them in that day. I had the pleasure of throwing a stink bomb in there one day to clear them all out quick. Then we came to one of the pub yards where the farmers used to bring their horses for breeding, and the local travellers used to bring their horses there once a week during the springtime, and they would stop there sometimes overnight with the stallions. And we as children used to like to see all these horses coming up. And then beyond that we had the local builder. Now if you go around Haddon, you can see a certain number of houses all over the village that stand out, and they were built by the local builder, Harry Feast and Son, as it was at that time. He employed three or four bricklayers and three or four carpenters, and made a first-class house. In 1920, he built one. 1927, he built one for my father, an eight-roomed house with a bathroom extra, and the price was £843. And that was one of the last houses where all the doors and all the windows were made in the village. And they also plastered it with lime plaster and horse or cow hair mixed with it. And if you look at these houses of that type in the village, you can see them, they stand out amongst the others. When you got next door to there, you had the old Baptist chapel before the new one was built, and the cemetery next door to it, which was used as a schoolroom and a meeting place for various things. Next to that was an interesting place to us as children, because it was a disused sandpit that was planted round with big elm trees, and that was the local rookery. And when in each year, as the young ones began to fly, they used to have a crow shoot, and we used to stand and watch that and fetch the birds up for them in the hope of getting a shilling or so. Beyond that, you come to the first pub on that road, which was called the Sandhole, and next door to that, and is still there today, is a small shed that belonged to a man by the name of Gough, who used to make shoes. He actually made the shoes there in my time. Farther down you get another pond, which was one of the three ponds in Hillrow, and was used, as I say, to wash the horses' feet and to soak the fellas in summertime. Farther beyond that, you came to a blacksmith shop, which wasn't used very much, but was used occasionally. Then you come to another Haddam landmark, the terrace, a row of houses, which we haven't many terraces, not in the village as such. Beyond the terrace, you come down to the lower part of Hill Row, and then you come to General Farms. There are no big farms on that area. They were all small holdings or small farms, and the dominant name in them was Fairchild and Burton, and still is today. When you get along farther still, you come to another pond, and you come to Porch House, which is an old house of about 1657, I think, or something of that age, that was built at the time of the drainage of the fens by the Dutch style. And it was built of old Haddam bricks, which are burnt from the top surface of the clay, and when burnt, there's so much sand in them, they're red in looks. Farther on from that, you come to another old farmhouse built in the same brick and about the same style. You come then to what is called Butler's Lane, which is a lane and reckoned to be the dirtiest lane and the most inaccessible lane that we've got in the village. When you get beyond there to the edge of the fen, you come to the you come to the fenland, and round the village is a cut or a dike called the Cut, and this is placed right round the village, and it takes the water that comes off the hill and it conveys that round towards the river and goes down the canal into the river. Farther on from the fen, you go down to the lowest part of the fen there, and you get the drain, which conveys the water from the fen to the river and goes to what we call Haddam Engine. This engine in the 1800s was a steam engine come from the Midlands, and the man who drove the steam engines come from the Midlands with it to drive it. And it's since been changed to diesel engine at the moment, as we've got no big quantity of electricity in that area. So it's now a diesel engine that pumps the water out. In my days, we had only one bridge, and that's called the High Bridge, built about 1900, and the road was never connected to it. The Erith Way was altered by the drainage of the fens, and we knew that as a suspension bridge. And it was a very narrow bridge, and you could only go over one vehicle at a time. And I passed there one day with a load of fruit, got on top of the bridge and met a man in a pony and cart. And I sat looking at him to wonder whether he were going, I didn't go back, whether he was going back, but luckily he did. And that completes our boundary of the village up to that end. And there was a small place there, next to the river, called the Hermitage, where us local boys used to say a hermit lived, but that I don't know much about. Now, if we take the station road, the old windmill was on the corner, an old public house that was closed a few years before we bought it. Next to that was the Three Kings, and this was an inn, in the fact that the people who owned it had to provide a meal for any traveller who called there. And at the northern end of it was a gateway, much like the old-fashioned coach houses used to have, but that's now filled in by a toilet. Next to that was a big house that was owned by a man named A.G. Wright. He was a local farmer, and he had a water supply there that supplied the house by a tank in the roof, and that had to be pumped up daily from the well. Next door to that was Chewell's Farm, which was owned by a man by the name of Coatman. And during the wartime, he was a salesman for hay and straw. But one day he took the wrong case, and when he went to take the straw out to show the man, he found he'd got his son's football kit. And his son took a little flick of hay to dress himself up for football. Beyond that was a house that was owned by the Satchel family, and our longest living woman lived in that until a few years back. Next to that was the what we used to call the horse doctor. That was an old fella who practiced horse doctoring and generally veterinary work in the style they used to at that time of day. And the doctor had a paddock behind his house, and the horse doctor had a pony trap, as that was their means of getting about in the 1910-12 time. And he also had a very large umbrella, what covered it, which they called a gig umbrella. And if we could get for a ride in that, you know, we were soon there. When you get beyond that, you come to a local carpenter and wheelwright. But I never did see him doing much wheel work, but he did a lot of ladder making for the village. Beyond that, you had a shop, which was a greengrocer's shop, which had a lovely piece of cork bark and always a lovely smell of oranges and grapes in it. And that was on the way to the station, so that they did a fair trade there at that time. Directly opposite that was a butcher's shop, and also the Porter family, they had a Maltings there. And this Maltings was still in the same condition about the when I was about that time of day, and was later used as a British Legion hut. And